Right now, it is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio. David joins us live on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast David on Tuesday the following week, also on the weekend as well. Now, besides this, David has his own website, themediabeat.us, and he's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we say, good morning, David. Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Happy summer solstice to you.
Yeah, this is the longest day of the year, and now we start sliding back towards winter.
it's the high point of summer. Does the weather in your area reflect that, Dave?
It will today. When the rain gets out, it's going to be warm and breezy, and we're going to actually have a nice day today, tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday, and then next week, showers and thunderstorms and more of a summery feel to it.
Well, here in New York City, it's wet again. But, there's promise of sun on the way. So summer solstice is here.
All right. Well, I woke up, I purposely, when I got home yesterday, I stayed away from news. I did not want to be exposed to all the people guessing about what's going to happen. But I come into work this morning, and of course I can't get away from it. It's my job. I've got to see it. Now,
that's the unfortunate thing about being involved in journalism. Yes, we do have to keep up with the news.
Sooner or later.
As appalling that task as that task is,
we can run, but we can't hide. So now, what's interesting is the first thing I see this morning is. And it caught my eye, and my heart jumped for a second. Trump approves drone strikes in Iran, and my heart jumps for a second. But then I say, "But he
not with joy, I don't suppose."
No, but then all of a sudden, in the next line, because they got me like they normally get me, that he changed his mind when the strikes were already in the air, getting set to take off. And the New York Times, to verify the report, said when they brought this up to the military did not say it is not true, and they did not tell them not to run the story.
Yeah, it's a non-denial denial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, and we have the New York Times word for it, and everyone else in the media firmament, including the most responsible outlets, are all taking the New York story, though, and the fact that the way that the New York Times chose to interpret the military response, and indeed the White House response, is as being one of confirmation, is being generally accepted by other responsible journalists, too. It's probably on balance a true reflection of the way that yesterday went. Trump was certainly in one of those moods where reckless behavior was very likely, and he was tending in that direction, but he decided in the end to pull back. And interestingly, one of the best New York Times people writing, well before this story was researched and published, was saying that at the heart of this issue was, of course, exactly where that American drone was. Was it over Iranian waters, or was it over international waters? And Helene Cooper is the reporter I'm talking about, who has lots of White House reporting experience. She predicted, saying exactly how America responds to the shooting down of the drone by the Iranians will be determined exactly by where it is eventually discovered that the shooting down actually occurred. She was basically predicting that the Americans would not take severe action if they look at it carefully and discover that, maybe it wasn't actually in international waters, which, of course, is what the Iranians have been saying from the get-go. I'm not saying that that's in any way conclusive, but it's suggestive that the Americans had enough concern about this whole issue to realize that even at their most bellicose, like Trump can be, it was decided that this was not wise to respond with military action of a severe nature.
I guess what scares me is that when it's written the way it's written and when it's reported the way it's reported, It's going to get under his skin, and I do believe that that his mind will change. He's just too volatile of a temper. The more news for
you. Oh, sure. It's very hard to be confident of any decision making coming out of the White House. It can be reversed on a dime, as we know.
Of all people, I mean, he does not like to be perceived as being weak. So,
or open to persuasion either. Yeah. And doesn't like to be. His notion of advice that he doesn't want to hear is that he's being pushed around, and nobody pushes Trump around is the constant theme. It's indicative of great insecurity, of course, but it's not the most useful attribute to have in a leader.
We would just have to exactly see what happens. I mean, the whole problem with even the Pentagon showing videos and things like that is there have been so many lies starting with weapons of mass destruction and on from the American government to the world that it really, unless you have lock solid proof, the world is going to be against a unilateral strike.
Yeah, of course, and I think most people are taking the view that although the videos released and other bits of military intelligence that are being thrown in little snippets in our direction, there is never going to be anything conclusive in what we're presented with, as so often in military intelligence, and and we are going to have to go, and most countries, as they look at the situation, are going along the road of asking the question, what's the preponderance of evidence? They know that there can be no conclusive proof beyond all reasonable doubt, as in an American courtroom, but what there can be is a sense of what's most likely to be true here. And most of Europe, for instance, is going along with Angela Merkel and being doubtful about the rightness of the United States argument in this case. And we are left with that terrible phrase that Trump himself is so fond of. We'll see what happens.
Well, we will see what happens, unfortunately. But this is the precarious place now our foreign policy has left us in, where the investigative units, the CIA and all the investigative units, have been dumped on so poorly that you don't know who to believe. The president obviously can be swung either way by his advisors
or by his own instinctive reflexive actions that tend towards the bellicose. Yeah, indeed.
All right. Well, let's get away from one craziness and go to another craziness.
Happily, yes. A change of craziness would be very welcome.
And that would be the upcoming leader of Great Britain.
Yes, indeed. Sorry, it's impossible not to laugh. Serious, though, of course, this issue is.
Well, because I've seen some reports on a dark horse candidate that has come up, but I can't believe that sooner or later, even when the Conservative Party names the person that's going to replace Theresa May, that there aren't going to be elections called, because it's just so muddled. The waters are so muddled.
Well, we are down to two candidates now. So the members of Parliament and the Conservative Party have done their job, which is whittle down the longish list, not as long as the candidates to oppose Donald Trump in America, but a hefty team of people who wanted to lead the Conservative Party, something that in this slot you and I have referred to earlier as a poison chalice, and we can't imagine why anyone would want it. But a handful of men in the end, it tended to exclude women almost from the beginning, and where we were at five earlier in the week, and now it's down to two. The whittling down process being done inside Parliament, and now the twosome that is left, Boris Johnson, the person who evokes most tittering laughter, I'm afraid. I saw one image of him when the final twosome was announced yesterday, portraying him as a clown. His face was painted on one side, at least in this photoshopped picture, as a clown. The other side was painted with the usual blonde, floppy-haired, mop-top look of the real Boris Johnson. But of course, the question being asked is, which Boris Johnson are we going to get? The clown or the serious-minded, well-educated guy that we know is in there? Although, you know, well-educated doesn't mean that he can't be idiotic at the same time, as he often has been. And his opponent is going to be Jeremy Hunt, who until recently, well, in fact, is still serving as the foreign secretary, the equivalent of the Secretary of State in the United States. And it is these two who the membership at large, in the country at large, of the Conservative Party in Britain are going to cast their votes. There are about 160 to 180,000 of these people, and the decision will be theirs. And it'll be taken not very quickly. Suddenly the whole process is going to slow down while they stump the country. And within a month, we'll then know who the next prime minister is. And the next leader of the Conservative Party, who will automatically, in these circumstances of the moment, become prime minister. But you're very wise to foresee a likely change after that, very soon after that, a general election, because the whole process, the whole sort of undignified shindig that it's been, has left the country very dissatisfied, and whoever it is will have a tenuous hold on the levers of power, and it is almost a foregone conclusion that there will have to be a general election, and the British public as a whole will get their chance to say who they want to be Prime Minister, not just the Conservative Party's decision.
And I go back to John Oliver, the last general snap election, which was held there.
Best ambassador Britain has ever had to the United States, John Oliver. Yes.
He did a show, and he showed the clip of Lord Buckethead sitting next to Theresa May.
Don't you remember that?
And then he flew Lord Buckethead over to be on the show, and. You know, John Oliver, I think, really is. He should be knighted because he ties America and Britain together in a way with humor that is just terrific.
He follows in a long line of people who have done that, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he just does it so seamlessly.
You remember the whole song and dance, the whole bit about explaining Brexit. And this is where it gets tricky, and this is something I wanted to ask David about. It was clear what his position about it was. You know, this is a terrible idea. Let's not do it. And yet the
Brexit as a whole is just a terrible idea. Well, John Oliver is hardly alone in believing that. And using it as the basis for his entire argument. Yeah,
right, no,
sure.
No, but it was a perfectly worthy argument. This particular show happened when it was pretty much received wisdom that Brexit wouldn't be voted for. As a matter of fact, I went to bed that night, not John Oliver night, but the night of the, and everybody was absolutely...
The night of the referendum?
Yeah. Everybody was...
Oh, sure. It did take a received opinion totally by surprise.
Totally.
2016 was a year full of shocks, as we know. The Trump victory was one thing, and of course Brexit was every bit as unexpected as well.
Well, here's my problem with that. Not that there's anything wrong with this. Here's my problem with that. Received wisdom, which we suckle like mother's milk every day of the week, is frequently wrong.
True, yeah. No, because received wisdom doesn't mean it's accurate.
And I think that Oprah put it best because after about, I don't know, about 6 months ago, there was a piece on her and what she's doing and the OWN network, and probably in conjunction with working with Apple as a content provider. Mm-hmm. But she said, no, if she had been doing her show, she would have had a completely different idea. She would have been exposed to far more than she was, and she might have had. She allowed us how she might have had a completely different idea of what was actually going on versus what was being talked about, and perhaps would have had the ability to modify the, in quotes, conversation in such a way that people were like, you know, instead of walking around so bloody confident that, oh, this is what's going to happen, of course, and we know best, you know, people might not have been so shocked.
Well, exactly. If you keep your ear to the ground, as any producer of a factually based television program ought to, then you're more likely to get it right. The trouble with the chattering classes, of course, and I include in that the opinionators in so many television and newspaper and website originators' offices, they are often in their own little bubble of opinionation rather than fact-finding. And if you stick yourself in that environment day in, day out, then, of course, received wisdom is what you're going to traffic in, keeping your ear to the ground and your shoe leather well worn, as I keep going on about. And we both do, Jill and I, then you're much more likely to have a clearer idea. Here in this city, that was so evident in the matter of Amazon trying to get tax breaks for opening up a whole new warehouse operation in this city. The vote went against them there, and the chattering classes, the opinionated leader, editorial writers and the like were wrong-footed by that decision, too. They didn't know what way people were tending, and in the end voted. And the decision was another case of one of these, oh my, what a surprise. Why didn't we know this?
And
well,
what worries
you didn't know it because you weren't paying attention.
Exactly. And what is troubling about that whole thing, even when we talk about what's going on today, I was interested, I was listening to the both of you this morning, and I was interested in the trajectory of the chattering classes and how the information of what was going to happen, what didn't happen, when it was changed, etc., was ultimately relayed. And the reason that I'm saying this is because it's abundantly clear that people who are writing about things now knew about them before. And this is my point, my conflict. Let's say that you know something, you know something that's going on, all right? But you can't say it. What do you do?
You're gonna have to be a little more specific.
All right.
Give me an instance of what you mean.
All right. Do you think that the planes were in the air for?
Yes.
Of course they were. But do you think that at the time that they were stopped, people didn't know that?
People didn't know what?
That they were stopped?
They wouldn't have known it was the moment they were stopped. They wouldn't have known that.
No, they wouldn't have known it until it was released. I'm talking about the people who are there within the situation. I'm talking about what happened yesterday, okay? Here's what we found out this morning. Marshall, you said strike was launched and then it was called back. It was basically...
It was. People said it was stopped in midair. Of course, it wasn't stopped in midair because
mid preparation well
because
that's the storyline.
Yeah, the story.
We were getting ready to do it, and then the White House decision was no pullback.
Simply because you cannot bring back the missiles once they're in the air. But still, what makes the story and what everybody, what hopefully they will write about. In their stories about it in the future, and hopefully there won't be a strike in the moment of writing these stories, is that precariously close to a huge, huge
problem.
To something that you can't take back. And I'm still worried that that'll happen because you just can't tell. But how close we were. I mean, we've seen 7 days in May. We've seen the Cuban Missile Crisis. This will rank, if everything comes out and it is true, will rank right up there with that.
Right. Now, what time, just out of curiosity, was his press conference with Trudeau?
It was yesterday afternoon.
Exactly. All right. So by yesterday afternoon, it was pretty clear that what some people, at least from any timeline that the opinionators have been going on about, at 7 o'clock, it was still going to happen. But in the afternoon, it's just if you start adding up what you don't know, it becomes really clear that people did know something and you're the one who doesn't know it, not the people who were there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, sure. I mean, in the realm of the decision makers, although other people close to the ultimate decision maker, there was clearly an argument going on. It was ebbing and flowing as the course of the day went on. At the time of the press conference, Trump was doing something very interesting for Trump, rather unusual. He was calibrating his language a little more carefully. Any professional or just reasonably accomplished natively reader of the runes would sense that not everything was a done deal with this matter, and people were coming and going on the issue inside the White House and no doubt inside the National Security Council too. I guess nobody should be completely taken by surprise that the president should order a pullback. At the same time, it was pretty clear that once again we're dealing with a mercurial chief executive, and that's never a position to be confident about.
Well, I was going to just say the problem that sits out there now is that cooler heads prevailed in some areas yesterday. But when you have and I'm not going to just lay this at the feet of Donald Trump, when you have some advisors like John Bolton Miller, and they're constantly in the president's ear. That's really what the generals and what the military planners and all the secret agencies have to go up against.
Sure, and it's been interesting to see how Trump himself has sensed that Bolton is a wild
west
too,
right.
and if anything, he's a wilder card than Trump himself on the issue of Iran, and I think Bolton's boldness, if you like, scares Trump. Because he may end up doing the one thing that he, well, one of the things that he said in his campaign that he would never do, which was get America involved in another foreign war. Trump is many things, but he's not stupid. Especially when it comes to self-preservation. He's subject to tugging and pulling and pushing on all sides, and like all presidents, he's got in the end to make a decision in response to advice that goes in different directions sometimes.
Right, which is one of the benefits of being mercurial. You know, in my sub life, I look at when everybody's birthdays are, and I. I'm fascinated because we seem to go through cycles in presidents of very specific times of year and very specific signs. And if it emerges that that Boris Johnson becomes...
I love that nickname you use.
I can't help it. I just and you know the two sides, because he's also yesterday. What's the 19th is his birthday, And you've got a bunch, if he is, you're going to have a bunch of, shall we say, mercurial leaders that have, shall we say, split personalities because they're Gemini. They just have many, they've got multiple personalities.
And, that could explain a lot, yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's, the funny thing about, you know, sorry to wax astrological, but the funny thing about being a Gemini is they don't mind showing various different faces. They've got no problem with that. So it's people who don't know that you're looking at a disco ball that have the problem.
Here's my problem, and that is all it takes is a John Bolton or Miller or anybody else to come up to the president and say, oh, Mr. President, you just made a serious mistake that just equals yourself with President Obama's line in the sand. Because, yes, that is something that could throw him off the deep end. It is. Because it's not about Iran at that point. It's about him, and it's about his presidential power as being compared with President Obama.
I respectfully disagree, but that's a fair, you know, based on, it's like, okay. You know,
So it's just simply a man that's revoked just about everything that Barack Obama did in office. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton still weigh on this man's mind.
We didn't have time to talk about it, but the Telemundo interview and what came out of that is pretty hilarious, just because of the way that it's being presented. But I'm not going to. There's just not enough time to go into that, except to say that who picks what comes out of these interviews.
Well, David.
Well, we do.
Yeah, and
people like us is what I mean. And other journalists are feeding on the carcasses of other people's already picked over stories. Yeah,
well, and that brings it back to, it's like amazing how often the chattering classes are so busy chattering that they're not actually reporting. I guess that's my point.
We'll see where we are in a week.
We always say that.
Yeah, check with you next week.
Hopefully.
Oh no, we'll still be here. Somebody said I can't do it. I can't tape it. I can do it next week if we're still here. I said, yeah, okay, I'll put you down for next week.
All right. We'll be here.
All right.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.